Jewish Marriage Part 3. So last week we spoke about the commandment of procreation, and we spoke about what happens at the Jewish wedding ceremony. Now we're going to speak about today who you should not marry, and tomorrow we'll get to who you should marry. So that's the topic. Which people are you not allowed to marry? And then later on we'll speak about which people are you allowed to marry. So there's different categories of women that you're not allowed to marry, and I sort of categorize them based on the severity of the sin of marrying them. So there's different degrees of, you know, who you're allowed to marry, who you're not allowed to marry. We're going to break it down based on the severity of what's the problem of if you do marry them, or even if you just have relations in an intimate way with them, you know, how problematic is it? The first category is what we call in Hebrew the arayas. Arayas literally means the nakedness, and comes up in the book of Leviticus and Sefer Vayikra, in the chapter 18 in Leviticus, as well as again in chapter 20 of Leviticus. It talks about all the different people that you're not allowed to marry, and the expression used is like ervas, you know, eisha savicho lo yisregale, the nakedness of your father's wife you shouldn't reveal. So the word erva means nakedness, so that became like the general term for all these ladies that we're talking about in this first category that you're not allowed to marry. They're called arayas, the nakednesses, right? It's actually interesting that on Yom Kippur in the afternoon, so we read about these different ladies that you're not allowed to marry. The list of these different relationships that you're not allowed to do in Leviticus 18. We read about it, Yom Kippur, by Mincha in the afternoon, possibly to remind the person that he should, you know, refrain from doing illegal things in the sexual realm, specifically on Yom Kippur, because the person is supposed to be separated from his wife on Yom Kippur. That's an interesting idea. So the first category is these ladies called arayas. The punishment for arayas is what we call kares. Kares is the most severe type of punishment that we have in the Torah. Kares literally means to cut. Right? Kares means to cut. And what it means is one of three things. Either it means that a person's soul will be cut from the world to come. It's cut off from the continuation. Or it means that a person is going to die early, possibly under the age of 60. According to one opinion, it means under the age of 60. Another opinion is that kares means that a person's children are going to die, and he's going to end up dying childless. So these different opinions of what kares is. But kares is considered the most severe of the different punishments that the Torah gives. They call it in English, call it spiritual incision or spiritual excommunication. That's what kares is. So all these different things of kares, the Torah says that if you do it on purpose, you get this punishment of kares. If you do it by mistake, so then you bring a korban chatas, a sin offering. And if you do it with witnesses and a warning, so you can get either lashes, or in certain circumstances, a person can get the death penalty, a capital offense for some of these examples that we're going to... I have a chart over here I'm going to show you in a moment. Yes, sir.
What is arayas?
Yeah. So we said arayas means nakedness, but it's going to be a list of women that marrying them is considered an incest, right? Oh, a list of women that you're not allowed to marry. That's what arayas is.
So, and by kares, like you're saying, in general, that's the.
That's what in general what kares is. The Mishnah says that there's 36 different types of sins that a person could do, which incurs a punishment of kares. But we're focusing specifically on what are called the arayas, the forbidden sexual unions.
How do you marry somebody by accident?
What?
When
we talk about getting the punishment of kares, so we're talking about just having intercourse with them. I'm talking in our framework, we're talking about you're not allowed to marry them, but there's also the fact that if you have relations with them, you're also violating this prohibition, and you can get cursed. First of all, I didn't say accident, I said by mistake. Right? So I think the classical case that they talk about is if one of these ladies that you're not allowed to marry is your sister, right? A man is prohibited from marrying his sister, right? So let's say you're in bed and the lights are closed and you have your sister and your wife with you and you have relations with one of them by mistake. And you didn't realize which one was which or something like that. You make a mistake. Something like that. I'm not sure exactly that's the classical case, how they describe the case of getting kares for this type of sin.
Would a person naturally be sensitive that there'd be privacy?
Yeah, could be.
Well, but if there are two women in the bed next to him, it's not certainly going to be privacy.
That's also true.
How do you understand?
Yeah, I don't know. So, these prohibitions. Okay, so just to catch you up, Alex.
Yes, sir.
Just to catch you up, we're going through six different categories of women that you're not allowed to marry. So the first category is the category.
Men category.
What?
At least there's no men categories. Good.
Yeah. So the first category is called the kares. It incurs the punishment of kares. And we call them arayas, which means nakednesses. So there's a certain category of women that you're not allowed to marry them, basically because it's considered incest. Right? So this is the most severe of the women of the categories of women that you're not allowed to marry, and it incurs, if a person has relations with one of these women, it incurs the punishment of kares.
And so, if you have relations with them.
What?
Both marriage and relations?
Okay, so like this. We spoke about last week that the way what creates a marriage according to halacha is what you do is kiddushin, right? That's the what we call the acquisition of marriage, right? That's kiddushin. So there's certain women that you're not allowed to marry that if you do kiddushin to them, so the kiddushin works, but you're not allowed to have relations with them, and you're supposed to dissolve that marriage. Meaning it's effective post facto, but you're not allowed to continue, right? Then there's certain women that if you do kiddushin, the kiddushin doesn't even work at all. Right? So our category that we're talking about right now, this category of kares, the first category, kares. So these ladies, if you do kiddushin to them, the kiddushin does not work at all. It doesn't work at all. You can't halakhically create a marriage with these women.
Incest.
Yeah.
Mom, sister, grandma.
Yeah. We're gonna talk about exactly who they are. Uh-huh. Another point when you talk about these types of women is that when a person violates a kares prohibition and you have a child, so the child is what we call a mamzer, which is, in English they translate mamzer as a bastard. It's not quite a bastard. We'll talk about that later, exactly what a mamzer is and what the prohibition of a mamzer is. So that's different halachas, different rules that are relevant to the category of incest, which gets kares.
Hey, Rabbi.
Yes, sir.
And you can get cars in different ways, not related to marriage.
Correct.
So if you get cars in a different way, and then a child, no matter how you got cars, he's considered a mother.
No, if you had a union that union incurs the punishment of cars, then it makes the kid a mamzer.
Okay, but if you got cars in another way,
no, that doesn't, that no bearing. It's a sin that is so severe that you incurs kares. So that type of sin, if a child is born from that sin, so then the child is a mamzer.
Is this derived from the Chumash or other sources that are later derived from the Chumash?
This is all derived from the Chumash.
Okay, and also liable for death, is that by that's just basically like God's rule, Hashem's rule.
Right. So if you know, nowadays we don't have a whole Jewish court system,
yeah.
And we don't have witnesses and we don't have warnings. But in the time when they had a Jewish court system with proper witnesses and warnings and everything, you know,
okay.
if all those circumstances line up, then a person could be liable for death by whatever. Right. So we have this. I gave you out this chart over here. So you have all the, what I wrote down is 14 different cases of incest, right?
Okay.
They can sort of be broken up into two types of women that you're forbidden from marrying. One type is that she's inherently considered an incestuous relationship, right? And the other type is through a certain act of kedushin, she becomes an incestuous relative of yours, right? So like, let's say number one is daughter, right? So your daughter is inherently in an incestuous relationship. If you try to marry your daughter, right, that just she's your daughter, right? But when you look at number two, your son's wife. So what son's wife is if your son does kedushin to another woman, right? So she becomes your daughter-in-law. So his kedushin creates a prohibition of you to that woman, right? It makes sense. Number three is granddaughter. So your granddaughter is inherent. Number four is your mother. That's inherent. Five and six are your father's wife and your brother's wife, which are not inherently forbidden. But when your father does kedushin to a woman, or your brother does kedushin to a woman and marries her, so that creates a prohibition that now you're not allowed to marry her.
But they're not. This is not like father's wife. This is not your mom or this is like
right.
A remarriage.
Right. Number four is your mother. Number five is your father's wife. It's a separate category. It's a separate type of relationship.
That's the second wife. That's the second wife that your father took.
It doesn't matter what order it is. She could have been
number five.
Yeah, number five could be your father's wife from before he married your mother. It could be your father's wife from after he married. It doesn't matter. It's not necessarily second per se. It's just a different wife other than your mother.
Until they break the kedushin.
No, that's the thing. Even if you break the kedushin. So in all these cases, she becomes forbidden to you forever, right? So let's say you have a son and your son marries somebody, right? And then they get divorced or your son dies. Could you marry that woman? No, you can't. She's your daughter-in-law forever. You can never marry her anymore.
Got it.
Right? She's always going to be that number, you know, incest number two, right?
So where's the aunt?
Sister. Number seven is sister. That's an inherent prohibition.
Where's aunt?
Number eight. Is your one of your parents' sisters, right? So that's aunt. Your father's sister or your mother's sister is your aunt. That's one of these prohibitions. Number nine is another aunt. Number nine is your father's paternal brother's wife. Mm-hmm. Right? Your father has a brother from his father's side, and he marries somebody, so she becomes your aunt in that way. It's in Hebrew. It doesn't necessarily, the word aunt in English means more than it does in Hebrew. Right? In English, it can mean one of your parents' sisters or one of your parents' brother's wife. In Hebrew, it's two different words.
Rabbi, maybe I'm confused, but I thought like, maybe I'm like completely wrong, but I thought like, let's say you're married and you pass away. Can't your brother, if you have a brother, marry your wife?
So that there is such a mitzvah called Yibum. It's a whole complicated topic. I hope to cover it on Tuesday.
Okay.
But you're right. We're talking about in general. In general, you're not allowed to marry your brother's wife, even if your brother dies. Right? But there are certain circumstances where not only are you allowed to, but there's a mitzvah to do it. But we'll get to that, I think, on Tuesday.
Eight and nine are two types of ants?
What?
Eight and nine.
Eight and nine are two different types of ants.
So what's the difference between them?
Well, number eight is your father or your mother's sister, right? That's your aunt. That's one aunt. Another, number nine is your father's paternal brother's wife.
What does that mean?
Being your father's brother from his father's side, right? So your uncle, your father's brother, but he has to be a paternal brother. So your uncle. So if your uncle marries a woman, she becomes your aunt.
Yeah.
Right. So that's number five. That's number nine. It's right. Your aunt, that marriage, right?
Is there also father's maternal brother's wife?
No. So your father's maternal brother's wife, according to the Torah, is permitted. You're technically allowed to marry her.
Is there any swara l'chalek b'yin shnei?
Swara? I don't know. But we'll see that it's not in practice. It's not really permitted. Sure. But according to the Torah, it's permitted. Number 10 is your wife's daughter, right? From 10 and till the end. So these are all people that become your relative through your marriage. You gave kedushin to a woman, you married somebody, and now her close relatives become forbidden to you because of incest. Your wife's daughter, your wife's granddaughter, your wife's mother, your wife's grandmother, your wife's sister, in the lifetime of your wife, all these people become forbidden to you because they are relatives of your wife and you're related to your wife, so it's considered incest to be with any of these ladies.
So if that wife dies, are you allowed to take her daughter?
No.
No, once they're there.
The only exception is number 14. Your wife's sister is only prohibited while your wife is alive. But when she dies, then you're allowed to marry her sister.
That's what a lot of things happen. That in Europe, that happened many times.
Yeah, in Europe, that happened.
It happened many times. Right?
Yeah, it was a common thing that people, especially like if you want to like take responsibility. So like your wife dies, and then you want to take responsibility for the family. So you'll take her. Let's say she has a younger sister who wasn't married. So you marry her.
Did that happen also by Rav Kook?
Did that happen by Rav Kook? What was it? Rav Kook married. It could be.
His first wife.
Was that Darius' daughter?
Passed away.
Yeah, it could be.
They wanted to keep him in the touch of family. They wouldn't give him the family. So they gave him the sister.
It could be.
Sure.
It makes sense. And then we have on the what's it called, right side column, so I wrote the death penalties that you can get for some of these things. Not all of them incur the death penalty. Some of them do. Right? We know according to the Mishnah in Masechta Sanhedrin, so there's four different types of death penalties that the Beis Din, that the Sanhedrin, the high court, could give a person. There's stoning, which is considered the most severe. And then there's burning, which doesn't really mean burning. It means pouring molten lead down his throat. And then there's strangulation. And then there's beheading. Right? Or
zealous rage?
What?
Is that zealous?
No. So zealous rage is something else. We'll talk about it in a moment.
There's no beheading written.
No, so most of these cases, all these cases over here are either stoning or burning, except for the last one, which we didn't talk about yet.
So does it hurt more to get stoned than to have molten fire?
It's not a matter of hurting more or not. What's a matter of is, like, there's, I guess, more of a public spectacle in putting this guy to death, and it sets more of an example, and I think makes more of an impression on people.
So stoning is more...
It's considered the most severe, yeah. And the most severe sins get stoning. A person who does Avodah Zarah, idolatry, gets stoned. A person who violates Shabbos gets stoned. Right? A person who sleeps with his mother, so you just get, you get burnt. Different things like that. It's just a person who does adultery, so he gets strangulation. It's just different degrees.
What's strangulation?
What is strangulation?
Yeah.
Chenek.
Yeah, what do you do?
I don't remember offhand, but basically they strangulate him. I don't remember exactly how they do it with a rope, but I don't remember exactly offhand how they do it. But
it's not fun.
It's not fun.
It's not the hanging that Goyim
does. No. It's not. The deaths that the Beis Din gives to people, the death penalty that the Beis Din gives executes. Is not as gruesome as people have done in other nations. Yes, sir.
So Rabbi, who would be doing the death part? Like, isn't it also, wouldn't that violate another rule of not killing another person?
No, but when an agent of the court is putting someone to death in an official capacity, so there's no problem of murder. It's not called
the one that's killing them.
Yeah,
or the people.
No, it's the court. The court
the
does
court.
It. Yeah.
Okay, so they're taking the responsibility for the death also.
Yeah.
How is Kara spelled in Hebrew letters?
Kaf, Resh, Saf.
Okay.
Kaf, Resh, Saf. Fine. So that's the first category. The first category, I called it primary incest, of ladies that you're not allowed to marry. And if you try to do Kedushin doesn't even work. And if you have relations with these ladies, so then the resulting offspring is going to be what we call a mamzer. Right? The next category... What?
All these 14...
All 14 of those.
The result is mamzer?
Yeah.
Okay.
The next list I have over here is forbidden relations incurs kares. You see that section?
Mm-hmm.
So we have five people listed. So one is married woman. So married woman is also the same thing. You can't do kedushin to her because she's already married. If you have relations with her, the kid is a mamzer. Also gets kares.
And this is relations, so just like sex.
Yes.
We're not talking about marriage.
We're talking about sex, right?
Both people will get the strangulation, the woman and the man, or just
yeah,
the man?
Yeah, well, it depends on the situation. If they're both doing it willingly, they both get punished.
Okay.
If the man forces her, so then he gets punished and she's off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
The menstruating woman, so there's no death penalty for the menstruating woman, mm-hmm. but it does incur a punishment of kares, even if it's his wife.
What is the punishment of kares? What is kares?
So we spoke about that before you came.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You'll have to listen to the recording.
Sure.
a menstruating woman, if you have a child, if you have a child, so the kid is not a mamzer. The kid is what we call pugum. Pugum is sort of blemished, and the Gemara says that a kid who's born from a nida, so he has certain undesirable character traits. He's like especially chutzpah. He has a special chutzpah, like a special boldness. You know, he's too bold. He doesn't get embarrassed easily. So that's like considered, you know, a pgam. Pgam is like a blemish. So that's the child of a menstruating woman, called a nida in Hebrew. Menstruating woman is called a nida.
Pugum is the same word for wine.
Pugum is not the same word for wine. Wine that was cooked is called pugum.
Isn't wine that when you taste wine, it's called pugum?
No.
You have to add wine to it?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, pogum in that case means that it's not complete yet. So it's like blemish means like it's like missing something.
But by case number two, there's still an egg.
Is there what?
Still an egg to be fertilized and
okay.
Is
so
this physically, there's still
so. So in second, you're asking a good question. He's asking how could a menstruating woman become pregnant? I just told you that a menstruating woman, if you have a child with her, it's not a mamzer, but it is pogum, right? So he's asking how could she become pregnant if she's menstruating? What? No, so it does, from what I understand, it can't happen according to the science. It can't happen because menstruating means cannot.
Sometimes I've heard of cases a woman gets pregnant while she's on her period.
I don't know, but I think that the simplest answer to what your question is that once a woman starts bleeding, so then she becomes forbidden to her husband. She has to count certain, you know, the way we do it nowadays is she has to wait 5 days and then count 7 clean days and then she goes to the mikvah. Right? Until she goes to the mikvah, she always has a halachic status of a menstruating woman for the rest of her life. Until she goes to the mikvah. Right? Doesn't matter where she's holding in terms of her week, or in terms of her monthly cycle. So you can have a woman who right now she's ovulating, but since she never went to the mikvah from when she last menstruated, so then therefore she could become pregnant, and she has the halachic status of a menstruating woman.
So it's very important.
Makes sense, Alex?
How did they prove that?
How did who prove that?
How do you prove that the woman didn't go to the mikvah? So that they always have to have two people to see you going to the mikvah.
Yeah, you're right. First of all, we're not talking about Bezdin proving anything. We're not talking about the court proving anything. Right? We said that menstruating woman, there's no death penalty for it. Mm-hmm. Right? This is just between you and God and the woman. Mm-hmm. Right? She knows if she went to the mikvah. You know, hopefully, if she went to the mikvah, and God knows.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
It's very important for the community to have a mikvah.
Yes, it is.
You can see the Bible community, it's unfortunate they don't have it.
Unfortunately. Okay, number...
What can be done to improve? What can be done?
I don't know. Number three is male-on-male relations, which is also karis, and gets stoning. If you have a child from that, then you must be living in the 21st century. Bestiality is also the same thing.
Yeah.
It's also kares and stoning, and it's for a male or a female. If you have a child from that, then I don't know. That's really weird.
Our cousins do that more often.
Our cousins, the Arabs, you say?
Yeah, they do that.
Have children from
them. Okay.
So, number two, the child born is not a mamzer?
From a menstruating woman? Yeah. Correct.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because he's not...
Because what?
Because a West menstruating woman could be still your woman, and why would he be a mumser if it was your woman?
Right.
Menstruating. Why would it be a mumser? Mumser is only if it's these women right here.
Or a married woman. Or any...
Or a married
woman.
But
I thought if you get kares, which you do from a menstruating woman... And then they have a child.
The case of menstruation is a special exception to the rule. Usually, if you get kares, the child is a mamzer. In the case of the menstruating woman, the child is not a mamzer. Because you can technically... See, the way it works is that if you... Could you marry a menstruating woman?
Yes.
Could you do kiddushin to a menstruating woman? The answer is yes.
Yes.
You can. Right? You can't. You can do kedushin to her. You can't do kedushin to any of these other women. So because you could do kedushin to her, so then the resulting child is not a mamzer. That's really the way it works in the Gemara.
But such a case, there has to, after the wedding, there has to be like a
Yeah, yeah, fine, fine. That that's technicalities. Yeah, yeah, fine, sure.
There,
what?
There there.
Yeah, yeah, fine. That's just to separate them so they don't have any relations with each other. But the technical, you know, halachic effectiveness of the wedding actually works, even if she's menstruating.
That
right?
Means the kedushin is chal.
The kedushin works, correct.
And the nesuin is chal.
Yeah.
Both
yeah.
Kedushin and
yeah.
Both
is there a chapter or parsha in the Chumash where this is primarily derived from?
Which part?
Well, if there's, I would say maybe
no, 1 through 14 we said is in Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20.
Okay.
Am I allowed to write in this paper?
You can do whatever you want with that paper. No, no, I have, I made 15 copies of it. Each of you guys could take two copies.
Leviticus 14 and 18 you said? 14 and 18 you said Leviticus?
Leviticus 18 and Leviticus 20.
Oh, 18.
What
is that going? That's what are the sources for these most of these cases of incest?
Mm-hmm. Sources. Okay.
No okay. Yeah. So then so then we'll switch it like this. We'll do the next category.
So what broke him?
18 and 20.
18 is, that's what we read on Yom Kippur?
That is correct. I already mentioned that in the beginning of the year.
Got it.
Yeah. The next so this was category one of women that you're not supposed to marry. Right? Category number two is a short category because it only has one person in it. And the category number two is a woman who you get kares, but the kares doesn't have a source in the five books of Moses, in the Chumash. It doesn't have a source in the Chumash. It only has a source in the prophets.
And
yes, we're talking about forbidden relations, number five specifically. Non-Jewish woman, marrying a non-Jewish woman is forbidden. It incurs kares, but that kares does not have a source in the Chumash. The source of that kares is in the prophets, in the prophet of Malachi, in chapter 2, verse 11, he says, Judah has betrayed, and an abomination has been done in Israel and in Jerusalem. For Judah has defiled the holy nation of Hashem, which he loved, and has taken in marriage the daughter of a foreign god. Right? Married women of foreign gods, from foreign nations. And he continues and says, May Hashem eliminate from the man who does this any child and descendant from the tent of Jacob, and anyone who might offer a present of offering to Hashem, master of the legions. Right? So he says, May Hashem eliminate from the man. Right? Yachreis Hashem. Hashem should cut him off. Right? So the prophet Malachi says or reveals to us that there is a punishment of kares for a man who has relations with a non-Jewish woman.
So this is not biblical.
This is not no, it is biblical.
What? This is rabbinical.
It's not rabbinical. Yeah. It's biblical, but it's not written in the five books of Moses. It's written in the prophets. So it's considered, it's called Divrei Sofrim. It's the words of the prophets, the words of the Sofrim, the words of the scribes.
So it's in the Bible, which is the Tanakh, but not in the Chumash.
Correct. Okay. Right. So the source of that is Malachi chapter 2, verse 11 and 12.
Does that make it any less?
It does.
Heavy?
It does make it less heavy. You said before that if a person violates a kares prohibition, any kares prohibition, yeah, let's say, he violates it. If you do it on purpose, you got kares. If you do it by mistake, so you bring a korban chatas, a sin offering. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, this type of prohibition, it seems that because there's no source for it in the Chumash, so then if you do it by mistake, you don't have to bring a sin offering.
So why did he...
If you do it on purpose, you get kares, but if you do it by mistake, you don't have to bring a sin offering. Why what?
So why was this decided upon? What was the reason for this prophet to establish this non-Jewish woman law? Kares.
One second. Why did he do it?
Yeah.
He didn't establish it. He just revealed to us that there is such a law. This law exists by tradition. It's just that he's the one who records the tradition in the first place. And because it's recorded here and not in the five books of Moses, so it's a little bit more lenient.
So it's the oral, you're saying by oral law, it was revealed to the Jewish people on Mount Sinai that they were not allowed to be with
exactly.
Jewish women, and therefore he just documented it for the first time.
Right.
Prophet.
Right. Yes, sir.
So, just asking for a friend of mine, if somebody did do some of these things and they incurred kares, then they happen to be a Baal Tshuva, like at the Shishiva, what does that mean?
So,
are they still kares?
We said if you do it on purpose, you get kares. Right? If you do it by mistake, what happens? You bring a sin offering, right?
They don't do sin offerings.
Now, let's say you didn't do it by mistake. Let's say you did it by a complete accident. What's a mistake? A mistake means I know this is forbidden, but I forgot that she's not Jewish. I forgot that there's such a prohibition. I forgot this prohibition applies to her. Yeah. Something like that.
Or if you didn't even know.
If you didn't even know that there was a prohibition, yeah. Right? Or let's say you didn't even know that she wasn't Jewish, yeah. Right? Someone misled you, or someone, depending on the circumstances, that could be considered onus. It's considered an accident. So you're completely a person who violates a halacha by accident is exempt from it. There's no punishment. You can't be held. You can't be held responsible for something that you don't know about at all, but and that you did. It was completely beyond your control.
So not even a sin.
Right. So tell your friend that he's okay.
But still, they would not. If it happened and they had children, the children for sure would still not be Jewish, regardless.
Correct. Because the lineage of the child doesn't just have to do with the prohibition. It has to do with the parties involved in making the child and the parents, right? So if the mother is not Jewish, so the kid's not Jewish. It's not a punishment that because you had relations with a non-Jewish woman, so you get punished that the kid's not Jewish. It's not because of that. It's not a punishment. It's that if the mother's not Jewish, the kid's not Jewish. That's just the way it works.
Is the mother's not Jewish, the kid's not Jewish? Is that come from the Mishnah or somewhere else?
It comes from the Mishnah. The Gemara talks about it, but it's proved from the Bible itself.
Oh, okay.
Because it's a little bit complicated what the proof is, but it's actually involved in related to the next thing I wanted to mention, that we just said that if a person has relations with a non-Jewish woman, so he gets kares, right? And that kares comes by tradition. Now there is a prohibition that is in the Chumash. In the books of Moses, right, in actually Deuteronomy, where it says, "Loi sischatin bam," do not intermarry with them. Don't marry with the. Some people say it's only talking about the seven nations of Canaan, but we understand that it's talking about all non-Jewish nations. It says, "Do not intermarry with them," and that prohibition means don't have relations with a non-Jewish woman in a way that looks like a marriage.
But Moses did.
What?
But Moses.
Well, according to tradition, Moses' wife converted. It doesn't say that she converted explicitly in the Torah, but that's what we understand. Yeah, what?
I'm sorry. I've always had a hard time understanding, like, why is it that the man cannot create Jews? Like, what you study all day in the yeshiva, you know, whatever. How is it that you're not special enough to create the Jew, but the woman can? Like, why is it inherently has to be a woman? What does she have? What if she's not a Jew? What if she's not like a quote unquote like seminary Jew, whatever? I don't know what the word is, but like, you know, what if she's not a practicing Jew? What is it about the woman inherently that makes the Jew?
That's a good question. I'll try to come up with a quote. Coherent answer for that, and I'll try to just address it on Tuesday.
Okay.
So why do you have to rely on Yom Lachi regarding number 5? You brought a source from Dvarim already.
Okay, because the source in Dvarim, which says don't intermarry with them, is only if you have relations with them in the context of something that looks like a marriage. Right? We're gonna you take a non-Jewish woman and say she's my wife now. Now we're married, right? So that's prohibited by Leisis Chatin in Deuteronomy. But just to have relations with her, just to have sex with her, that's not included in the prohibition of Deuteronomy, because that's not called intermarrying, that's just called inter-whatevering, right? Yeah. Intercoursing.
Intercoursing.
Yeah.
Okay, but how could this ever happen if there's an Easter Nagia min haTorah?
That's a different question.
That's a different question.
Fine, that's a different question.
How do you approach my question?
It's too complicated right now. We'll talk about it later. But he's asking that basically all the cases of Arias that we spoke about, so they don't just involve, besides the prohibition of having sex with these women of incest, the Torah also says don't approach her, don't come close to her. And coming close involves, let's say, kissing, hugging, touching in an intimate way, whatever. So he says, how does it even start to have sex with them if you're not even allowed to come close to them? And the answer, the simple answer is that the guy violated this prohibition of coming close, and then he violated the next prohibition as well. That's the simple answer.
He's still a guy at the end.
Right. The next, okay, so in this category of kares that comes through tradition, right? So that means a man having relations with a non-Jewish woman. So there's another halacha that says that if a man, a Jewish man, has relations with a non-Jewish woman in public, in the presence of, let's say, 10 other Jewish men, so there's a halacha called kanaim pagimai. A zealous Jew can come and kill him, and he's justified in killing him. That's why I wrote zealous rage over there on the chart. So it's called kanaim pagimai.
But you can defend yourself.
You can defend yourself, and you're not. And let's say you're in middle. I'll tell you this.
And if you kill him, then you're going to be punished?
No, so you won't be punished if you kill him. He would only be allowed to kill you if you're in middle of doing the act with this girl, with this lady, in public, in front of a bunch of Jewish men. He would only be allowed to do it in such circumstances. And if you go around and you kill him, so you're off the hook because you're just defending yourself. This is one of these like weird, interesting halachas. The Gemara says it's a halacha ve'in marin kein. This is a halacha, but we don't teach it, or we don't give this as a ruling.
Sure.
Right? If a guy comes to court and he says that so and so is married to a non-Jewish lady, can I go kill him? The court will tell you no, you can't. But really, the halacha is that you could.
Can they all gang up and kill you, or can it has to be one at a time? Like, what if like those 10 men see you, right, and one of them is like in this zealous rage? Can he tell, like? What if he tells his 9 other buddies, let's kill him? Can they all then attack you at one time?
I mean, I guess. I mean, technically, only one is going to actually be the one that gives him the last lethal blow, I would assume.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But
the case in the Torah.
Yeah.
By Zimri, was it Zimri?
Yes, Zimri.
He was inside a tent, so it wasn't in front of 10.
No, but everyone saw what was going on. It's the same idea. There's a situation where this happened in the Torah, and it's brought in the Book of Numbers. There was a man named Zimri who was from the tribe of Shimon, who was having what we call hanky panky with one of the princesses of the Midianites, and he was killed in a zealous rage by a zealous man named Pinchas.
It was inside the tent,
but it was in front of everybody, so everyone knew what they were doing.
That's called a tent closes up so a lot of people can see. But hear what I'm asking?
Yeah, here.
A tent closes up so a lot of people can't see.
So this prohibition of having relations with a non-Jewish woman, even though it seems to be that it's less stringent than, let's say, the other cases of primary incest, because those cases are explicit, the kares punishment is explicit in the Torah, and here it's only by tradition, we still consider it a very strict sin. Especially because of the fact, like what you were mentioning, Alex, that the resulting child is not even Jewish.
Sure.
So it's considered especially heinous sin because of the fact that the child is not
Jewish. Hashem never enters that child.
Exactly.
Everything genetically wise, everything's all the same, but the Neshama itself is not. It's a different Neshama?
What?
It's a different Neshama, or there's no Neshama period? There's no soul? Okay, fine. Okay,
do non-Jews have a soul?
Yeah, they do.
So the answer, at least the accepted answer, is that they do have a soul, but it's not the exact same type of a soul as the Jewish people have a soul.
What is the source of that? I was taking some notes, but then
yes, sir.
Yeah. So
like when the like non-Jews have a soul, but not exact the same type. Did I hear it? That's right, right?
Yeah.
What source is that from? Like Mishnah, Chumash?
That's from later commentaries.
Even later than the Gemara.
Yeah, okay. I don't remember offhand who exactly said, because that's already sort of subject to dispute. There are some people that would argue that a non-Jew doesn't have a soul at all.
Okay.
Or has the type of a soul that an animal has, but not the same type of soul that a Jew has. That's sort of how they say it. There's different ways of saying it.
Even the President of the United States.
This is a more esoteric thing. I'm not so familiar exactly with the...
Even the President of the United States.
I don't understand what he has to do with anything.
He has a job.
What?
Even he has
he's a soul man. Okay, so of course, if you try to do Kedushin to a non-Jewish woman, so the Kedushin doesn't work. Because the whole idea of Kedushin only applies between a Jew and a Jewess.
So even if you're married, you're not married.
You're not halakhically married at all, right? It's nothing.
You can just be like, I'm not married to you anymore.
Exactly.
It's nothing.
Exactly. You mean nothing to me.
Yeah.
It's not you, it's me. Okay, so that was category number two. Category number three is what we call the Shnias La'arayas. These are the cases of secondary incest. This is rabbinic in origin. There's no punishment of kares, and there's no death penalty for marrying these women. It was instituted, the Gemara says, it was instituted by King Solomon, Shlomo HaMelech. He instituted these secondary cases of incest as a way of making sure that people won't come to violate the cases of primary incest. So I wrote this whole nice chart over here, 15 different types of secondary incest. I'm not going to read all of them right now, but it's a little bit complicated exactly who these relationships are.
So were
but like,
all of King Solomon's 700 wives Jewish then?
So yeah, according to tradition, he converted them all. But there's still, you know, some people say that the conversion wasn't valid, or because they converted with this, but like with, sure, you know, not pristine intentions, so then there's some doubts that you can call some certain doubts on the conversions, but that's basically the approach to King Solomon and his 300 wives and 700 concubines, something like that. Yeah, so those are that's a case of secondary incest. In the cases of secondary
roots,
what?
Who converted roots?
That's a different question. In the case of,
how would you approach that question?
I'm not approaching it right now. In the case of secondary incest, so if you try to do Kedushin to her, so the Kedushin does work. Kedushin does work on secondary incest, but you'll have to give her a get. So like you're technically married to her, but by rabbinic fiat, you're supposed to divorce her and not remain married to her. So that's the third category. And I give this whole list. Your maternal grandmother... What?
It's getting way too complicated.
It is. It gets complicated.
With your family.
What?
Yeah, I get it. Just don't do it with your family.
Don't do it with your family.
Grandfather's mother. How would she even be alive?
What?
Paternal grandfather's mother.
Great grandmother, right?
See, because the Torah only says like you're not allowed to marry your
because they were like 13 years old being married. 14.
That's
by the time that she's like 45, she already has like she's like a great grandmother.
Right, but the point is like the Torah says you're not allowed to marry your mother. Right. Well, maybe your grandmother. Maybe yeah. Right. Not that people. Not that you want
to
do it.
No. Just
but that like
to make
right. Just to make sure that like you don't even go there. So like we're gonna forbid things that the Torah itself didn't forbid, just to make sure that like nobody will end up violating something more serious.
By the way, how do you spell Kedushin in Hebrew letters?
Kedushin.
Yeah.
Kuf Yud Dalet Vav Shin Yud Nun. Okay, now we're up to category number four. Category, you want to copy the chart? Category number four is women that if you marry them or if you have relations with them, so you violate a positive commandment and a negative commandment. A negative commandment and a positive commandment.
Is category four on here?
Yeah,
no.
Here.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
Oh.
This chart was just category 1, 2, and 3. The rest of it is, you're going to have to hear it verbally from me.
Category
categories are there?
We said there's six categories.
Six categories.
So there's this category are women that if you marry or have relations with, you are violating a negative and a positive commandment, right? And all the cases in this category refer only to a kohen, right? All these cases are referred to a kohen. A kohen has a special commandment of kedoshim yihiyu lelekehem. A kohen should be holy for Hashem, right? So that's a positive commandment that a kohen has to keep himself pure or holy for Hashem. And then he has a negative commandment that he's not allowed to marry one of three women: a grusha, a zona, and a chalala. A grusha is a divorced woman. A zona is a woman who is not, colloquially the word zona means prostitute, but in this context the word zona means something else. It means it has a more narrow definition. It means both a woman who is not born Jewish, meaning she converted, right, or a woman who had relations with somebody that she was not allowed to have relations with, right? So let's say a Jewish woman who had relations with a non-Jewish man, or a Jewish woman who had relations with a married man, or someone, or a Jewish woman who had some sort of incestuous relationship, so she becomes forbidden to a kohen, right? So that's grusha is a divorced woman, a zona is a woman who was not born Jewish or had illicit relations with somebody else, and a chalala is a woman who violated one of the prohibitions to a kohen, or was born from such a union, right?
Yep.
Let's say a kohen marries a divorced woman, so if he has a daughter, that daughter will be a chalala, and she's not allowed to marry a kohen, right? Oh, wow. Chalala, the word halal means like to be defiled, so she's chalala, she's somebody who would be genetically or genealogically would be a kohen, but she's desecrated or defiled from that status. That's what chalala is. She's defiled from the status of being a kohen. So a kohen is not allowed to marry a divorced woman, a zona, which we said what the definition is, and a chalala. And there's a fourth prohibition, which is a kohen gadol, right, the high priest, the high kohen, kohen gadol is not allowed to marry even an almana. An almana means a widowed woman. Right? So those that, so let's say a woman, a kohen gadol marries an almana, right, and has a daughter, so that daughter will be a chalala, and she's not allowed to marry even a regular kohen, right, because she gets that name chalala. If they have a son, a kohen with one of these people that he's not allowed to marry, or a kohen gadol with one of these people that he's not allowed to marry, so the son is a chalal, which is the same thing. He has the genealogical, you know, he's genealogically a kohen, but he can't practically act like a kohen. He doesn't get to work in the Beis Hamikdash. He doesn't get the first aliyah, etc. Right? This is an interesting thing because, you know, there's a whole business out there of like they sell like these genetic tests so you could do a blood test and see if you're a kohen or not. But the truth is that it doesn't really help because if you're, you know, you could take a genetic test and say like, oh, really, you're a kohen. But if your great-great-great-grandfather was a kohen and you married a woman that he's not allowed to marry, so then you could technically be a kohen from your genealogy, but then you don't have the halachic status of a kohen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're a halal.
But
right?
I guess I could tell you what tribe you were?
There's people that claim that they did a whole survey of all these different kohanim, and then they found they isolated certain genes which are more common by kohanim and kohanim families, and then they'll do a blood test and they'll tell you have those genes, so you're more likely to be a kohen from that family.
But there's no real way of knowing.
There's not. Yeah, this is not. It's not a halachically valid test. It doesn't mean anything.
Is there any more kohens left? Period.
There are kohens. Yes, there definitely are.
They are for sure, though.
You don't know that you're for sure. You just know by tradition. You by assumption. How do you know I'm a kohen? You know, my father is a kohen. His father is a kohen. Etc. That's how you become that's how you become a kohen. Right? You know, there's the story of the guy who goes to the Reform rabbi, and he tells the Reform rabbi, you know, Rabbi, I want to be a kohen. So the rabbi says, sure, I'll make you a kohen. Just give me $10,000. Okay. By the way, why do you want to be a kohen so much? And he says, oh, my father was a kohen. His father was a kohen. Missed the point. All right, so that's the fourth category. This category is a person who these are basically only these not basically only these are only applied to a kohen, and these are women that if he marries, he violates a positive commandment and a negative commandment. Positive commandment of being holy for a kohen, and the negative commandment of marrying these three types of women.
Well, what's that called?
Three or four.
Those,
which what?
The lav.
The lav. The lav is isha, grusha, v'chalala, zayna, la yikachu.
Isha.
Grusha.
Grusha.
V'chalala.
V'chalala.
Zayna, la yikachu. It's in the book of Leviticus, in chapter. What chapter? 21.
Whatever you say, I'm agreeing with.
Whatever you say, he agrees with. Okay. It's in Leviticus chapter 21.
I agree.
You're on the dot.
What
you'll look at it over there. There's one for Kohen, regular Kohen, and one for Kohen Gadol. It's two different verses over there in that same chapter. Yeah. Okay. So now we're up to the fifth category. Does anyone have the time?
It's like 5:12.
Okay, so maybe we will leave the fifth category for tomorrow. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, fine. We'll see you guys tomorrow.